When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, another comeback win for the Guardians. This time a little bit different. They had a lead. They blew the lead and then tied it in the ninth, forced extra innings and came out on top 10-7 in 11. Big clutch hits in that 11th inning by Jose Ramirez, Esteban Florial. But this was a complete team effort and a little bit different this time because the bullpen, which was, the top ranked bullpen in pretty much all of baseball, in a flash at Fenway, they gave up a 4-run lead. And this time the Guardians had to win it in a little different way than they've been doing so. But they stuck together and got this one done.
Yeah, Joe, it was a great win, a great night for the Guardians. But I think, Joe, if you keep going to the well too often, sometimes the well's going to come up dry. And I think that's what happened to the bullpen. You just can't keep using these guys night after night after night. You're going to have to get some length out of a starter. What BB gives you, what, 5 innings again last night? You'd like to see him get into the 6th or 7th inning. But, the bullpen gets exposed. But give the Guardians credit, give that offense credit just for, coming back late. And it just goes to show you, Joe, in this era where, in extra innings where the runner starts at second base, you can't stop at one run. You got to score 2. You got to score 3 runs. And that's what they did to finally, kind of beat Boston. That one in the 11th inning, they scored 3. And Scott Barlow comes in there and, shuts the door, gets his first save.
Yeah, and you made a good point in your Guardians breakfast post this morning on Cleveland.com. Nowadays, in this era of the extra runner starting on second base in extra innings, you've pretty much got to have strikeout stuff to get out there and get out of innings like that because it doesn't take much to get a runner over and get him in, and the Red Sox proved that. Against Emmanuel Clase, I'm not comfortable with that being a blown save for Emmanuel Clase. He didn't do anything wrong in that situation, other than, throw 100 miles an hour and give up a couple of, weak contact pop-ups, to blow that save, his second blown save of the year. What do you think? Should there be an exception made for an extra innings blown save like that?
The run doesn't count. It's not an earned run. So I think, he's compensated that way. But he does get charged with the blown save. This really changed the dynamic of a game, since they've been doing it, since COVID, since 2020. Mm-hmm. I like the action. It infuses in the game, but there are some discrepancies that we're going to have to live with, I think, as baseball fans and baseball writers and players and relievers. But the thing that gets me, Joe, this guy is throwing 101 miles an hour. He can't strike anybody out. What's going on? He the same thing happened to him. It was in the 9th inning against the Yankees on Sunday. He's got great stuff, but he can't put anybody away. And, they make contact on him. It's not great contact, but it's enough to get a run home. And, it amazes me. You sit there and look at this guy. He's 100, 101, and people are squaring him up and putting the ball in play.
Yeah, maybe he's too much around the zone, if that's an issue or a problem. I just, major league hitters, if they know where it's going to be and what's coming, I think they're pretty good at hitting fastballs, even if they're 101 miles an hour. So That's something. Maybe he's losing a little bit of movement on the sinker. Maybe he needs to look at developing a third pitch or experimenting with something like that, just to at least put it in a hitter's mind that you don't know if the 101's coming, something like that. But we go back to whether or not you need a strikeout pitcher on the mound to get a save in an extra innings game like that. Tito was always fond of putting Karinchak in that situation because you knew Karinchak could get a punch out more so than Class A.
Karinchak had the fastball and the curveball. He only threw two pitches, but the curveball was there was such a variance in speed between, 96 and 95 that, you really could, he could strike out guys. And that's a great point. I was thinking the same thing. With Francona would always use Karinchak, but we haven't seen Karinchak since what, February? We don't even know if he's how he's progressing in, with the bad shoulder. So, but still, it just goes to show you, it's such a different game when with that runner on second base. I've heard players complain that a reliever starting an inning with a guy on second base. That's like it's a free pass, and you're right, Joe. It's not the reliever's fault. He didn't put the guy on second base. Baseball put the guy on second base. The commissioner put the guy on second base.
Blame Rob Manfred. There you go. You know what? Rob Manfred should have a page on Baseball Reference, and that should be that should be where they calculate all the blown saves given up in extra innings because of the automatic runner. Every time that happens, it goes on Rob Manfred's Baseball Reference page, not Emmanuel Clase's. That would be
But
great.
that being said, I do like it. I mean it changes the strategy so much. We saw, I think, Boston kind of bunt, just, bunt, get the guy over and get the run in. But a lot of teams don't do it that way. They kind of pass the bunt up and just try to, get as many runs as they can
Well,
in that one chance.
yeah, if you're the visiting team, you've got to try and play for a bigger inning there. You can't really necessarily give up the bunt. You need to put runs on the board and try to, try to give yourself a bit of a lead. This game was important for a number of reasons to get this win for the Guardians. Third straight win, fourth straight win over Boston. At 12-5, the Guardians now have the best record in baseball. That's I'm not you heard that right. The best record in baseball, tied with the Dodgers and Yankees for the most wins at 12. Only 5 losses, so they're percentage points ahead of both of them. They're 9-2 on the road in 11 road games. They've won 9. That's the most wins, tied for the most wins through 11 road games in franchise history with 3 clubs, including most recently the 1948 club. They went on to do something special, didn't they, Wednesday?
Yeah, there's only been two World Series championship teams in Cleveland history, and 48 was the last team to do it. So yeah, that's yeah they've that's in they've got an asterisk by that for sure.
Is a couple of individual performances. Stephen Kwan, 3 for 5 with a run and a walk, 8-game hitting streak for Kwan, and he's what, one of the 29 hits is nothing to sneeze at. 29 hits through the first 17 games, the most since Eddie Murray had 29 in 1995. That's again, he's streaking, and his 9th multi-hit game of the season. He's also got 5 3-hit games this year for Stephen Kwan. Gabriel Arias swinging a hot bat, went into the game hitting 600 over his last 3 games. He went 2 for 6 with an RBI single in the 10th inning that put Cleveland up 7-6. But Boston came back and obviously tied the game. He had an RBI double in the second inning. Looks like he's seeing the ball. They're talking about the adjustment that the hitting coach has made with Arias to move his hands a little bit away from his body, and that sort of has given him a little bit more wiggle in his bat, and he's getting to pitches a little bit better. His timing looks great. He looks like he's on time to everything, so he's going well as well. Tyler Freeman, 2 for 5. a big double and a home run over the Green Monster onto Lansdowne Street. Jose Ramirez, obviously the big RBI single in the 11th inning. Andres Jimenez, 2 for 4, a couple of runs, and we'll get into here talking about probably one of the more important runs in the game that Andres Jimenez scored. But the way this offense is going right now, what are you seeing and what are you liking out of Cleveland's hitting group?
Yeah, Joe, I like the fact that like you were highlighting Arias, he's come off the bench, he's waited his turn, and now he's giving them some thump from the bottom of the lineup. You know, he's not just hitting singles, like he's hitting doubles, he's driving in runs. That's so important, I think, because you know they are so dominant at the top of the lineup that you really like to see, you know, the bottom third of that lineup produce, and they did last night. They were Brennan. I should say the last three spots in the lineup, Brennan, Arias, and Freeman were 5 for 15, you know, with two runs, one home run, four RBIs. In the top of the lineup, the top three guys, Kwan, Jimenez, and Ramirez, were 6 for 13. So when you've got six guys going well in a lineup, you're going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, and everybody was productive in the lineup. Even Josh Naylor was productive. You know, he had a hit that produced a run on a play where the ball went into right field. The right fielder, Wyler Abreu, bobbled the ball. Rougui Odor sent Andres Jimenez around third. Jimenez slides in, has to avoid a collision with Connor Wong, the Boston catcher at the plate. Originally ruled out on a tag at home, but Stephen Vogt saw something and immediately you know went to the challenge, and the call was overturned. The Guardians get a run because Wong was ruled to be in the base path and blocking the plate for Jimenez. It was pretty obvious that was something that Wong was doing, but Vogt, you know, made the point to say, hey, you know, when we send it to replay, we don't know whether it's going to, which way it's going to go. It's totally out of their hands.
Yeah, Joe, from what we've seen, and we've seen this play a few times, the home plate umpire always calls the guy out. And then he puts the burden on the replay guys in New York. And the replay guys in New York always come back and give the team the run. Well, how many times did we see that go against Cleveland the last couple of years?
Ask Austin Hedges.
Hedges and Zunino. It happened to Zunino last year.
I still remember Hedges, you know, putting the letter from the league, tacking it to his locker after he went off to the media about that play. But go on.
Yeah, Chris Jimenez on Bally Sports after the game, you know, really broke that play down well. It was really well done. You know, he's a former catcher, former Cleveland catcher. I mean, he had two or three tours with Cleveland. And he said the Boston catcher, Wong, you know, the throw took Wong into the path of Jimenez, but then he stuck his foot out and tried to stop Jimenez or alter Jimenez's path to the plate, and he said that's probably what caused him, to be charged with blocking the plate and a run to count.
Yeah, once Jimenez had to change his direct line into the plate, once he had to change that to avoid contact with Wong, that's when you've got to rule him safe based on precedent, based on, you know, what's been called in the past. I personally, as a baseball fan, as somebody who's seen that play 1,000 times before these rules were implemented, I don't necessarily know if I like that. You know, if the ball beats the runner and the catcher has the ball, I think there's no reason that he should be ruled safe on a play where he gets tagged out. But baseball is trying to clean that up and make it safer, and I get that. But you know, in that situation, old school baseball in me just thinks, yeah, you know, that's trying to legislate a problem that, you know, only affected Buster Posey, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it leaves the catcher in no man's land. It really is a tough, tough play. It puts, especially with the throw coming from right field, Joe, you know, you can't see the runner if you're the catcher. You've got to focus on catching the ball. Then you've got to turn and try to see, pick up the runner. It's just really a difficult play for him. I like the way Bo Naylor kind of explains it. He says, I always try to catch the ball in front of the plate. And then just kind of swipe at the guy. That's all you can do, basically.
Sweep back, and we've seen Bo Naylor do that on several occasions. The athleticism that he's displayed there back behind the plate, you know, it's certainly a refreshing change from this time last year when you had Mike Zunino, who basically couldn't move back there, you know, trying to handle the catching duties. So, a big play in the game, and really. Earlier when Stephen Kwan had you know, sent a base hit into right field and you know, made the turn at first base, dove back to the bag and they threw behind him and looked like he was going to be tagged out for you know, an out in that inning. I believe it was the second or third inning. It was the third inning, leading off the third inning. That play, they went to the replay and they ruled that Tristan Casas, the first baseman for Boston, had missed the tag, had actually tagged the dirt and not Kwan's hand as he got back to the base. Had the Guardians lost that challenge, they would have lost their ability to challenge the Jimenez tag play at the plate, and that run comes off the board. It completely changes the look of the game.
Yeah, that's a great point, Joe. I mean, Casas... He just put the glove down expecting Kwan to slide into it. And Kwan kind of like pulled his head up, pulled his chest back, and got his hand in there at first base. It was a pretty athletic move by Kwan, but it was a nice throw by the right fielder to, you know, to kind of throw behind him and catch him coming out, you know, taking a big turn around the bag.
Yeah, it's not the only big play that that Wyler Abreu you know, made or tried to make, or if you ask Jose Ramirez, he is owed two additional RBIs and an extra double because I believe it was the ninth inning when
inning
he could have saved us about another 45 minutes of extra innings and playing time had he been successful. He ripped that ball to right field with two runners on base. And Abreu makes a leaping catch on a ball that was over his head, heading into the corner there in right field. Just that was probably one of the better defensive plays that we saw all night.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, that was really a great defensive play. And, you know, probably Jose ends at there if there's anybody else but Abreu playing in right field. I mean, he like you said, that ball was scalded. Then Monday, you know, Abreu steals a home run from him. You know, in the first inning. So, you know, he's got to start hitting it off the monster now. You know, just ignore right field for a while.
I mean, Jose Ramirez is probably better than a 75% pull hitter on whether he's batting right-handed or left-handed in his career. So I don't think much is going to change on how Jose tries to hit the ball. But, you know, maybe just hitting it away from Abreu for the next two games might be a good idea. And that all depends on who's out there for the Red Sox, because right now, you know, as much as Cleveland's pitching staff is beaten up, the Red Sox, their lineup is suffering tremendously. They lost two more guys last night. Starting pitcher Garrett Whitlock left after the fourth inning with a strained oblique. And Rafael Devers, you know, pretty much their best player, their best all-around player, their biggest star, he left the game late with a knee tweak. So, you know, Boston's, you know, walking wounded just as much as anybody else right now.
Yeah, and Monday O'Neill, you know, collides with Devers, their left fielder, the guy, their hottest hitter with seven home runs. He collides with him, opens up an 8-stitch gash on his forehead and doesn't play last night. I don't know if he'll be back in the lineup tonight or not, Joe, but you're right. They have some serious injury problems.
Yeah, it's something that the Guardians can definitely commiserate with. And we should expect the Guardians roster to maybe look a little different before game time today, as you know, going deep into the game last night, getting deep into the bullpen again to get that win, But also pitching Ben Lively in tonight's game at Fenway Park. You're going to have to make a move to get Ben Lively on the roster prior to the game, and maybe even make another move to add some depth in the bullpen and get a guy out here who can maybe absorb some innings or two after these guys have been burned out over the last couple of days.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, what, the Pen goes six innings last night?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've been under duress, really. I mean, you know, they've pitched a lot, you know, in these first couple weeks of the season. You've got Lively, you've got some guys with options, Cade Smith, Eli Morgan, Sandlin. All those guys have options. I don't know.
Timmy Herron has options too. So.
Timmy Herron has options, but they're all pitching well, Joe. So mm-hmm. This is a tough call, man. I'm glad I don't have to make this decision.
Do you think maybe there's a chance that they make multiple moves to try and work something here, or is this just a straight one for one to get Lively on and then try to tough it out with the rest of it?
Oh man, you know it would make sense. But, you know, I just see a one-for-one move. I don't see a two-for-two. You know, what, you know, if you look, Tyler Beattie, probably, you know, you could DFA him and, mm-hmm. and make a move. But do you want to lose him? He's pitched pretty well. I know he didn't pitch well last night, but he's done a nice job in a variety of roles. But, you know, if you activate Lively – you know, that gives you six starters, right? So I would think maybe Lively, you know, Lively or Curry would slide into a bullpen role, and you keep the other guy as a starter. So maybe that's the move. Maybe there is, maybe it is multiple moves coming up here today.
Right. But it doesn't help you in the short term over these next two games.
Yeah.
If you've got six starters and you're short a bullpen arm, and the bullpen arms that you already have are already tired. So I think it might just mean, somebody goes. You bring up Beattie, his first six outings, no earned runs allowed, a zero ERA. His last four outings, I believe, six earned runs. So, and two home runs allowed last night are really sort of sparking that Boston comeback. You know, maybe there's something there. Maybe they're able to sneak him through on waivers and option him down to, or outright him to AAA to keep him there for a couple of weeks and maybe bring him back at some point during the season. So speaking of down at AAA, Anthony Gose, six and two thirds innings so far, scoreless. He's pumping 98, coming back from Tommy John surgery on his left elbow. Then could Anthony Gose at some point maybe become an option for this team?
Well, I think so, Joe. And, you know, they really like Gose. The organization likes him. You know, this is a guy that rehabbed all last year, worked hard to get back at a decent spring training. He showed pretty well that his velo was back. They just needed him to go to the minors and get some work in and get sharp. I think we see him, if not now, then at some point this season.
And you want to talk about how good the clubhouse chemistry is, how much fun everybody's having, how much they love each other and they pull for each other. You add Anthony Gose, who is by all accounts and from what we've seen, probably one of the greatest teammates you will ever see in a clubhouse. You add him back into that mix and it can only enhance things in the Guardians clubhouse.
Yeah, and they need, they eventually they're going to need a fresh arm, Joe. If the starters keep going five innings, they're going to need a lot of reinforcements in this bullpen. They're not pitching machines. They're going to need some help.
Come on, Hoynesie. All I want to talk about is good vibes and club chemistry. I don't need to talk about arms or velocity or anything like that. Hey, the other thing to mention, Chase DeLauder last night hit his first home run of the season for Akron. So he's reached base, I believe, in every game so far this year. DeLauder looking like he's having a fine start to the season. Probably won't be long before you see him at AAA.
Yeah, I think they'll give him time, Joe. Usually, It depends. It's still the start of the season in Akron and Columbus. Usually around you get 2 months in, maybe around the All-Star break, maybe they'll give him a little. They'll promote him to Columbus, depending how he's playing, of course, and how healthy he is.
All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We've got Ben Lively on the mound tonight, making his Guardians debut, and we'll recap that. Hopefully, it'll be an earlier night tonight from Fenway Park, and we can all get some much needed rest for the bullpen as well. We'll check in with you then here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
Good deal, Joe.